For December the 5th, 2025, we talk about Total Chaos, Asbury Pines, Peak, and much more. Welcome to Level 567. My name is Kay Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, everybody.
Hello.
Yeah, it feels like it's been forever, but that's only because Thanksgiving was between the last two sessions. Yeah. How are people doing? Anybody do something cool? Ben, going to go with you.
All right. What was nice is we had a couple extra days off of work for having a release a month ago. So today was the first day I went back since the last time we recorded. So that was nice. Just had a chill Thanksgiving with my partner's family in town. I think there were 7 people and 4 dogs, so a pretty good ratio to be happy with. It was cool. I made a corn dish. My partner made 2 pies, and all the food was really tasty. So it's hard to beat that.
With 7 people and 4 dogs on a grid, let's say like a 3x4 grid, is there a mathematical proof where you can arrange it where everybody is within reach of 2 dogs at any given time?
It's like a circular table where it's like, do we have to share a fork with a dog or something like that?
I'm thinking of like a birthday problem kind of thing where after a certain point, somebody in the room is a dog.
See, it's that more is, probable that's very, that
they're a dog, yeah.
That's difficult, though, because dog years are 7 human years, so that messes up the math.
That's a good point, yeah.
Now, you just cheat by inviting over some puppy girls.
I'll show it on the backstage, but one of the highlights was trying to get 4 dogs to look at a camera at one time. It ended up being good.
Why
once
would
we
you
did
do
it
that to yourself?
It's pretty rough. You have to a lot of pretend treats, you know, that situation, but it worked.
Pretend treats. What?
Well, I didn't have any treats, so you just have to like hold your hand up as if you have treats.
Okay.
To try and get some of them there.
The one on the right's still looking away, but it's close enough.
Yeah, that one is our dog, or our my partner's dog, dad's dog, Cooper. He was the one who was not interested in doing photos at all because he clearly saw there were no treats around. So that was the hard one.
A little
the
too smart for this. Been around the block too many times for that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah. Let's see. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. So the day of our recording was the year's first snow day for my kids.
Oh.
So schools were closed. We promptly went out sledding. Story about that in a second. And then in the afternoon, we put up the bat signal and had all the neighborhood kids come over, and we just played like 5 hours of Pathfinder.
Ooh.
So I had 5 kids around the table, and just, you know, we were mid-adventure and went, and it was a blast.
With 5 kids, that's about 1 combat, right?
Damn it, you stole my joke. Exactly. Yes. We rolled initiative shortly after starting, just because of the way things shook out, and we were still in initiative when it ended.
Yeah.
But good times were had all around. One kid was new, so he kind of had a pre-gen character dropped into the mix, and that was a ton of fun. It was just, you know, an ideal snow day. They, you know, after for breaks, they would go out and romp around in the yard for a bit, and then come back, fling all the snow gear off, sit back down at the table. It was cool. But out sledding. So, I can't remember if I've talked on the show before, but, Milo, my middle kid, just, he doesn't do anything to bring it on himself, but wherever we go, he just has a trail of girls following him around.
Okay.
There's an aura, there's something, like they know when he shows up.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll look over and it's like, yeah, oh, he's got a harem again. And he's completely oblivious to all of it.
Okay,
but so we're sledding, you know, in the morning, And, you know, he's going down and up and down with his brothers. And this girl comes over and she starts sledding next to us. And then she kind of taps me. She's like, "Is that your kid?" And I was like, "Yeah." "What's his name?" "Maya." "Okay." It's like, "Oh no." So she goes down again, and she's been sledding by herself, but goes down, and then, you know, Milo goes down around the same time, and she starts to walk back up and then stops. She's like, I need someone to help me. Could you, Milo, could you help me?" Like, mm-hmm. You know, reaching for his hand. "Can you help me up?" And Milo, you know, oblivious doof, goes, "Oh, you can just go up the stairs over there if you're having trouble climbing the hill." "Well, no, I really want to go up here. Could you help me?" And he goes, "Oh, well, you know, if you get on your knees, you can kind of climb up on your knees." I said, "Milo."
Lower your center of gravity.
Exactly. And so finally it gets through his head, and they were inseparable the rest of the time. Very much. I don't think he could have pulled away from her hand if he tried. Yeah. So, just watching that and being like, "My God, I'm in trouble."
A sledding crush is right up there with hotel pool crush.
Oh my God. Yes. It's a childhood rite of passage.
Yeah.
So we snow dayed the hell out of it today.
Awesome. That sounds great. Yeah. Moxie, how about you?
Well, went home for Thanksgiving and saw some of you guys. Yes. So that was fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was a good time. I forget if we talked about it last week, you know, when you were not
did.
Here. Yes.
Yes, but okay. Yeah, I haven't. So now you get to tell your side of the story, because honestly, I don't know if you listened, but we trashed you pretty hard. So it's only right that you get to speak your piece, defend
probably
yourself.
Deserved it.
No, it was super fun. Yeah,
I had a good time of that. I'm trying to think, other than that, I made it back to DC before, you know, the ice age set in, so that was okay. Good.
Hard to tell what that means, like... Yeah, right, in these times.
Right. Well, yeah.
I believe you described it to me as you then went feral for the rest of the day to recover.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, in these trying times, I feel like we all need to go a little feral sometimes.
I see people refer to going feral, which I assume this is just a meme slang way to refer. Is that basically just goblin mode? Is that
yes.
The
yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Yeah, same goblin idea. Mode yeah. turned feral. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
throwing any sense of decorum out the window.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense to me. Cool. Well, I'm glad you had a good time. Yeah. My Thanksgiving was about as expected. I never know what to ask for Christmas. So I asked for a turntable, for my mom. I was like, don't get me a bunch of stuff. Just here's this cheap Audio-Technica turntable. It does exactly what I need to. And I asked for that because I want to, you know, listen to music through it. I don't know what else you would do with it, but, also like I want something to go shop for. And it's like, if you're ever in a new place, you just go to a record store and then you can see what they have, right? Same thing.
That's great.
I do that with used books, right? I always go to like a used bookstore and see what they have, like in the you know, sci-fi fantasy kind of stuff, right? And so I went out to a couple of places around here, one of which I went to, and I asked, like, "Hey, do you have any REM albums?" And the person laughed at me. I didn't know that was an unreasonable question. Not because it's strange to want an REM album. It's just like, yeah, no, you're not going to find those. You idiot. You buffoon. You absolute fool.
Are they just really popular or something?
People just don't get rid of them. Like, like at a used record place. Right. So like you get, you know, reissues and stuff, but when somebody buys them, they hold on to them, for a long time. So originals are bad and they're like represses. Ben.
Two things. One, this reminds me of the time that I asked for a cortado in Cincinnati and the barista said I've never heard that drink before and thought I was making it up. And then 2, I think you're moving to a city where you will find plenty of that if you're looking for it. The REM finals.
That is another, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, also, REM is too mainstream for Portland.
Also, have you seen the 10th anniversary Bloodborne soundtrack?
No, I haven't
Yeah,
seen
they're
that.
They're releasing a vinyl version of the Bloodborne soundtrack that looks
I'm
really
sure that's
cool.
Like six discs or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So did that so what, just a heads up for everybody. Don't Yeah.
That's your thing now. What is your favorite thing that you've actually been able to find so far?
I found, I'm going to sound like a parody of myself, but, at our Newmish record store in Mansfield, they had some good, used Neil Young, including an album that is like, basically the record label just like disappeared, because Ooh. Nobody, because it was so weird. It was like 1980. He had a, he put out a record called Trans, which is like a synth and like vocoder kind of like, you know, what if Neil Young wrote synth songs, and his label was like, what the fuck is this? They sued him over it. And people say like, oh, he did this in order to get the contract to get the label to break, you know, to break with him or whatever. But it's a good album. It's just weird for a Neil Young album. Yeah.
Wait, what did they sue him for? Like making music they don't
like
too based.
They accused him of tanking it. Yeah. It actually has like a super sweet story. Like Neil Young has a son with autism, and found out that it was easier to communicate with his son, you know, it's pretty profound in the son's case, easier to communicate with a vocoder. And so like wrote songs and, you know, learned how to use it to bond with his kid. Yeah. So I don't know. I got that like for
$10. That sounds
like
the coolest thing ever.
I know, right? Has an amazing cover too, if you look at it. And I also got a copy of Live Rust, which is Neil Young and Crazy Horse, like a famous live album of theirs.
So sweet. I have a high fidelity question here, but how are you going to sort your vinyls?
I don't know. I could probably do them autobiographically because I have so few of them. I have sorted my games autobiographically.
Mm. Oh, that's fun.
Which is satisfying.
Yeah,
that could maybe be my serial murder trait. I organize the nonfiction portion of my bookshelf from like hard science to soft science.
Okay,
I like that.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah, I do something similar with nonfiction in mine. That makes perfect sense. What I don't understand is like maniacs who sort them by size or something like that.
Oh,
like, what the fuck are you doing?
All right, I feel
color
like
coded.
I'm in.
You get a color code it.
I feel like I'm in a safe space. I organize my science books by like how abstract versus applied of sciences they are. So like math on one side, then physics, and then biology and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, like I've got, you know, just parts of mine, you know, like this is the shelf or like this is the area with like my like geography or like just books about cities, kind of stuff. You know, like weird atlases and things like that is its own little section. Like I've got the, you know, productivity books together, stuff like that. Yeah.
That's sweet. But Kay, how do we organize this show?
Well, regularly we do the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. This time we're going to do exactly that too. Sorry, you really fucked me up because I normally say like, "Oh, we should talk about video games," but you really fucked me up. So let's just do this.
The grind.
The grind.
Ready for the alley-oop.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the last period of time or so. Moxie, you were away. You've been away the longest, so I will throw it to you.
Yeah, so I do actually have something new. I picked up two games over the Steam sale. Picked up Cyberpunk and Peak. I've not played Cyberpunk yet. I need to figure out how to get enough hard drive space, which I feel like is, in fact, the most Cyberpunk reason to not play Cyberpunk.
It's inventory management. You're moving stuff around in the fridge. You're making room.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But you, I have tried Peak. Okay. Oh, go on.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, so I have tried Peak. Dennis and I did a run yesterday that ended very interestingly. So
is that just a euphemism for poorly?
Well, it's a euphemism for actually I maintain the game cheated us. Because we made it to the first checkpoint or whatever, like the end of the first biome.
Yeah, campsite.
And at the end of each biome, there's a what is it, like either a ancient luggage or an ancient statue that gives you basically one of the like magical pieces of equipment. And in this case, gives you a cursed skull, which I tried to use, but it turns out the effect of the cursed skull is it kills you but revives anyone who's dead. Okay. But we didn't have anyone who was dead, so the end result was it just killed me.
Oh, so it was a... Yeah.
However, where I maintain we were robbed is then Dennis tried to use it, and it just killed him and was like, all right, game over. It's like, no, it should revive me. Like that, live by this, well, or die by the sword, live by the sword. That's how that saying goes, right?
Let's be precise, because this was the first time I had seen this item in game. So truly had no idea what it did. At the checkpoints, there's a campfire, and that is one of the rare places in the game that you can cook your food, and that makes your food, you know, more powerful as a buff. And you can actually cook anything that you can hold over the fire, and even things that oftentimes you wouldn't expect to benefit from being cooked, And so Moxie gets killed by this new skull that we find. And my thought is, oh, well, if it's bad, use, you know, there's berries that you eat and they'll poison you, but if you cook them, they're really good for you. So my rationale is I should try cooking this. What's the worst that could happen?
Mm-hmm.
The worst that could happen is that it explodes and kills me.
Oh, were they cherry bombs?
And no, it was a cherry skulls. I don't know what to call it. But yeah, it also crashed our game. So,
oh wow,
just left us on the end screen and couldn't get back to the lobby. So yeah, that is a very cursed item.
That's a meta item. Yeah,
yeah.
So don't know if that final part was intentional.
Did you technically not use it then? You just like burn it and it blew up? Or
yeah,
did
I think
you,
correct. That's what it was.
Yes. Okay. It blew up in the cooking. I don't know. I guess if I had used it, it would have brought Moxie back. The sad thing is there is a revival statue also nearby that I don't think we had used yet. So we were fine to keep on going. this item just was the perfect Looney Tunes end to our run.
Well, the item lives up to its name, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, we're going to be playing Peak during Duckstream.
I mean, if I can
I feel like that's the case. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm excited to pick it up. Duckstream, December 12th through the 14th, next weekend, everybody. Go to duckfeed.tv/duckstream and you can see the shirt design for this year. Get yours today.
I showed that to Mimi, and she was like, that's a goose, is the first thing she said.
I mean, it definitely has goose energy, although I feel like goose energy is what is needed in today's world. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. No, I wanted it to look like it was speaking or yelling, you know. It is based on a picture of a duck. I did find a picture of a duck and I was like, okay, I can do like a Yoshi's Island kind of drawing over the, you know, that kind of matches this, like the, you know, the same kind of like pose, right? Use that as a reference. Change the coloring though. But yeah, it looks a little bit like a goose, but when I think of goose, I think of a Canada goose.
Fair.
So,
yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair because anything else is a swan, effectively. So
yeah,
but longer than I've seen ducks like this.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Anyway, Moxie.
Yeah, very good.
So other than that, I did try a run solo, which Des, I forget. Do you play solo much?
Yes, I've done plenty of solo play and plenty of duos. I think this should be the first time I do like four people.
Okay. Yeah, I was very impressed with the game as a co-op game and very unimpressed with the game as a solo game.
Sounds right for a co-op game.
Yeah. I think in particular, like, it has a pretty harsh time mode or like time element where like
the fog rising.
Yeah, evil fog. And then also the island. So one of the neat things about this is like, what is every 24 hours the map changes?
Correct.
Yeah, and real time? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then everyone plays on it, and it's, you know, it's basically equivalent to like whatever the like track of the game in or day in a Trackmania or something.
Yep.
But at least the current one is very, it is less a like mountain that is just like a bunch of twisty like towers right now.
Yeah. It kind of gets the more fanciful or like fantasy style mountain. You can get like floating platforms and stuff, and
exactly.
That can be difficult. Exactly.
But it's fun. I would say so far I think the only criticism I have of the game is it feels like it's maybe a little bit too long, or more specifically, I think it would be better with like hard checkpoints.
Yeah, I can agree with that because getting all the way out will probably take you an hour or so. Mm-hmm. Like it's an investment. And yeah, at least so far, even within the day that the island exists, there is not a checkpointing that you can leave the game and come back, right. Which is unfortunate. Well, that's fair.
So Ben, you do like the conceit of like the airline thing where like the lobby that you start the game in is an airport. The way you customize your character's appearance is by like using a passport. And then like apparently this is an airline where every single flight they do just crashes into a mountain.
Yeah. yes, crashes into the, well, technically, I guess, can an island also be a mountain? Sure, why not?
I mean, aren't all islands mountains?
Kind of the tops of mountains, yeah. If we want to look at it that way. I'm not high enough to have that discussion. It is 100% failure rate down to like, you know, the loading bar purports to be the airplane flying across the sky and it always stops short. With question marks above it, and then you wake up in the debris of the airplane.
Yeah. I also gotta say I really like the kind of the Boy Scout kind of motif they have. So the way achievements work in this game is that they're merit badges, and then they're actually displayed. You have like a merit badge sash that the your achievements are actually displayed on.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think that's pretty clever as well.
Yeah.
Ben, you've been trying to ask a question for like 5 minutes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. I was just curious if the maps of the day ever favor particular playing styles that either shut certain people out or make it more advantageous, or if it's something everyone can work around. Or
interesting. There's no mechanical character customization. So it's not like, oh, you know, I'm a real speed climber and I spec that way, so I can't do an endurance climber. I don't know. That doesn't really exist in the game. Probably the biggest thing is the biomes, a couple areas you are guaranteed to hit every time. And then a couple areas, it's like you'll get one of two options. And so the, you know, for example, one biome, one biome is a rainforest. It has like rain that will occur pretty frequently and slick things down. And mm-hmm. then the other biome is a like mushroom forest kind of deal where periodic winds can blow you off of ledges and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it also, I think I talked about this however many weeks ago, it also has a lot of like wildlife in it. Yeah. So those are very different play styles. I can't imagine there are any players that would consider themselves like, oh, I'm a Mushroom Kingdom specialist or
gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a me, Boy Scout man.
Yeah. Just scouts now. And also maybe just not existing much longer.
Well, or at least not partnered with the military anymore.
Yeah.
And so I guess that's what that's telling me too, is there's not like loadouts that you start with that like favor certain biomes or anything like that.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. That is one thing that's interesting is while there's like a map of the day, you know, that sort of thing, unlike most roguelikes I've seen, the seed apparently does not extend to the equipment you find.
That is a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the location of the equipment is the same on a given map, but basically all of the equipment, like the conceit is, you know, you're in an airplane crash, and so all of the equipment is in like luggage that has been strewn across the island, and the luggage is always in the same location on a given map, but what's actually in the luggage changes.
Hmm.
Yep.
Cool.
So, yep. Other than that, I'm just continuing on with No Man's Sky's expeditions. I'm doing their pirate themed one right now, which is a lot of fun, although not anything too, you know, like particularly noteworthy. So,
did you buy the copy of No Man's Sky that you're playing it on?
Oh,
yep. There we go.
I get it. It
took me a second too.
Yeah. I was worried it was going to sail over everyone, but it got there. It landed.
I just feel like No Man's Sky doesn't provide enough value for me to put money into it. Just,
so, I've been trying to figure out like what is the economics of No Man's Sky just being like a forever game that forgot to like do battle passes. And the only thing I can figure is just like the vast majority of people, it seems like, play No Man's Sky via Game Pass. So maybe that's just a you know, continuous revenue stream form.
They also might have found like a meteor made of gold that keeps growing.
You know, that does seem possible.
Yeah. And if they don't spend it on making No Man's Sky, it will eventually engulf the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, that's why Light No Fire is actually the growth of the meteor is accelerating, so they need to do this in
the guy, you got to fire games. Both barrels here because we're fucked.
Eventually, all games will be made by Hello Games, and we're just furiously trying to keep this meteorite down to size.
Yes. Let's see who's got something new.
I can. Oh, go ahead, Ben.
Ben raised his finger. Yes.
I have one new thing. It was recommended by somebody at work, but it's a game called Asbury Pines. Asbury spelled A-S-B-U-R-Y. It's a game that has two main mechanics that I usually don't really, I'm not really attracted to, which is it's kind of an idle game, and there's a shitload of text in this game to read. Kind of, I think something I was complaining about the last episode was like talking about how the Video Game Awards is like turning into the movie industry where it's like everything's a sequel, and it's kind of cribbing that sort of pattern from Hollywood where it's like just use old IP. This is like the positive edge of that as well, where it's like you're starting to get more refined things in games where like it's doing something interesting with the theming of the game and like matching something with like the narrative to what the game mechanics are. And this is like an example of that. So let me take a step back and explain what the game is. It's a game that takes place in a fictional town called Asbury Pines.
It looks like Idle Twin Peaks.
A bit. Yeah, it's a bit like that. So you have control over characters in this town. It starts off where you only have a few characters. You have like the sheriff of the town, the gas station employee, maybe a few other people. And you have different locations that you unlock that are either like places that you can scavenge things, places where you can work, and then places where you can kind of reflect or like natural locations. And each one of those things, if you assign a person there, will either produce a different resource, convert a different resource, or like give you experience is the type of resource that you have. And then you can spend any experience that you accrue to have a person live their life. And they can live their life until they die. And there's a part of the game that's just a timeline that shows a character in their life. And as they live their life, you'll unlock like story beats about like, so if it's like the sheriff, for example, of the town, it'll show like, oh, a grisly murder that he witnessed and like had to try and solve, or his relationship with the mayor of the town and where they might differ in opinions. And then eventually it'll show, oh, he died in like a gunfight or something like that. And so you're kind of judiciously spending this experience on these characters to unlock story beats. At certain points, they might be gated where you have to like wait for other things to happen before you can see what happens next in their life. Or you just choose like, oh, the next like milestone in their life is like way far out on this timeline. So instead, I might invest in these other people to progress their storylines and unlock more people, more locations, and improve my economy. So where you assign people it kind of influences what resources you get and how quickly you accrue them, because there's kind of this light RPG element to it where each character has different things that they're better at than others. So some might be more akin to doing scientific things, some might be more akin to like municipal things or religious things, stuff like that. And so that kind of influences where they can go, because some will be boxed out, and then how good they are at those locations. So there's a small meta progression of like, okay, where do I assign the best people to like kind of maximize the resource gain that I get? But then there's also this other part of it where, since it's kind of like an idle game, there's a certain point where it's like, well, I have everyone in their best place, but now I need to wait to accrue enough resources. So I'm going to save the game, go live my life, and then come back to it in a couple hours, and then I can progress and do something else.
And so it proceeds by the system clock, not just by you having it open.
Yeah, and it'll catch up. It gives you up to like 12 hours where when you come back, it'll simulate that amount of time that you've been gone, and you'll accrue whatever that's been.
So you close it out and you see a window that says like Ben died of getting hit by a bus before you could return to the game.
That would be startling. But there's this interesting marriage there where it's like, as you progress through the game, you start seeing like, not just one generation in this town, but you know, generations that became before or after. And so you start kind of seeing this much longer timeline and start kind of thinking in those terms. And so then there's this like interesting marriage of like an idle game and like how you're spending your time with it and what it's talking about with time. And I think the thing, because I'm trying not to spoil too much about this game, but I will say the game goes a lot of unexpected places, and it it kind of surprises you throughout the entire playtime. I think I played it for 20 hours and I 100%ed the game. It's still in early access, but it feels like it's a pretty complete game. So it's not like a overly long experience or anything, but the I would say the writing is very strong as far as like having very original ideas and having doing a good job of creating a compelling narrative with only a few number of characters. They don't over introduce like characters for the sake of the story. They introduce just enough characters to have an interesting conflict during that time period and have you think about that and then progress and go on to something else. Yeah, so I'm being a little bit coy and not describing everything fully, but yeah, if you're not turned off by either idle games or a lot of reading, I would recommend playing this game. I think it's a good experience.
When you commit experience points to play out somebody's life, does that take them out of your pool of people you can commit to, you know, work on different resource nodes? Like lose a really good, researcher, do they go away and you have to like build up somebody else to do that?
So there's one mechanic I forgot to describe, which is like a tech tree, and there's three branches, which I already mentioned. It's like science, religion, and municipal, like government. And so you can assign people to this tech tree. And basically these are much more longer tasks than any of the other things. So it's things that take anywhere between like 4 and 24 hours. But what you get is permanent upgrades to your characters. So for example, one thing is you gain like one extra resource anytime you scavenge a location. And so as you progress through this tech tree, it makes everything else easier essentially with your characters. So even though characters die, basically what that does is that gives you kind of a permanent person who you no longer need to worry about like feeding experience into and seeing where their story goes. They're now just like a body that you can commit to tech tree or creating resources at the town. So it's not a bad thing. The character's dying. It's kind of something that happens to everyone, which is, that's nice and meta. But so it becomes this issue of unlocking more characters is beneficial because then you have more people to kind of play around with. One restriction, though, is that they can only work in the section of the timeline that they're in. So
no time travelers.
Yes. Yeah. So if somebody was born in like Y2K or something, they can only work and progress things in that era. So yeah,
they don't understand computers that aren't transparent plastic.
Yes. The exception to that is the tech tree. You can put anybody there, but every working and resource, like sort of a conversion, that's like time specific. So
Tell me about the raccoon.
No.
Didn't know that was an answer. That was a possibility.
It's in the game's description. It has a portrait of either all or several of the characters. One of them is just a raccoon. So I want to check that out.
I'm somewhat purposely not describing a lot of the game because if somebody plays it, I want them to be surprised by where it goes. So
pay no attention to the raccoon behind the curtain.
Asbury Pines. Mm-hmm. Okay. Dennis, what have you been doing besides Peak?
Yeah, just one thing, and I've been watching it as much as playing it. I finally played Five Nights at Freddy's.
Ooh.
So this is, if you don't know what it is, I don't know how to help you. This is kind of a phenomenon, especially I would say in the generation kind of immediately under ours, which is how I came to it. I got a friend I don't want to say a kid that I mentor because he's freaking out of college now. But, I got a friend that I mentor that, grew up in like prime Five Nights at Freddy's territory
If you were born between the year 2000 and the year 2005, everything was this weird lo-fi horror game that makes money for a right-wing religious crank. Yeah, Scott Coffin sucks. Just want to say controversy acknowledged on him. Yeah.
Yeah, not a great person behind it. But this, you know, the kind of YouTube analysis of what is going on behind the scenes and the like in-depth story or suggestion of a story that's going on in little side stuff. Oh, go ahead.
That like that was the industry on this.
Yes.
Was like the people, it was all derivative products, right? Like it was all people watching somebody stream this, and it was all like actual books and stuff that were like written about the lore. It's one of those things, like it's kind of like, it was the first time that I kind of like realized by looking at another generation that kids fucking love lore. kids go crazy for lore. It was like this and Minecraft kind of hitting at the same time. And
Minecraft has lore?
Slenderman is in there.
Slenderman's rolled up in there. Yeah.
Slenderman's in Minecraft.
Yeah. But Slenderman was also before Minecraft. Yeah.
Yeah. Five Nights at Freddy's, though, disturbing amount of pedophilia in the lore.
Yes. Oh. Yeah.
As far as there is, so I should preface by saying, he found out I had never really touched Five Nights at Freddy's, didn't know anything about it. He's like, okay, you have to play it, and then I want to tell you some stuff. And so I played a couple nights of the first game. I didn't even finish that. And then he showed me like a lore video on like, here's all the stuff going on behind the scenes.
But like, none of that shit was in the first game. Like it was all like the second, right?
Yeah. Well, that's the fun, is people debate whether or not, you know.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And it's funny that around, so we'd watch a little bit of gameplay from the second just to see what had changed or see like key audio lines, watch a lore video, watch some gameplay from the third game, watch a lore video. So we got all the way through the fourth game. And around the third game, like the analysis people are kind of explicitly acknowledging that like this stuff doesn't actually hang together. Like there's not a master plot, concrete what happened that the creator is revealing, but it's really freaking fun to take these contrasting streams and debate them because there's a little bit of evidence each way and it's just vague enough that you can like almost choose your reality. You know, it's like, well, if you want a headcanon that this is what's going on, you can pull at all these things to justify it. And if you want a headcanon that something else is going on, you can pull at all these threads to justify it.
Yeah.
So we got to the fourth game and the lore behind it. And the really interesting things. That is no, the fourth game is when you're in the child's bedroom. And you have to instead of being in a security office, you have a weird ass bedroom that has doors to hallways on either side. Like I want to see the blueprint of this house because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, so at least up to the point that I'm at, it's very clear that bad things are happening to children, and I could see how people could take that to a very weird place very quickly.
Yeah.
I haven't watched any beyond that, so if that gets more overt and more pedophilia centric or whatever, I can't speak to that. But, you know, again, it's bad things happening to kids. So it's going to pull out the weirdos.
Yeah.
At least like the first and second game, that was by far the like mainstream interpretation of the lore, is that there's at least an explicit like predator preying on kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Like in the history of the thing. And that's, they soften that to just like child abuse, I think, in the movie or whatever. But yeah, it's because everything's going to be there. That's going to lean grim dark. It needs to feel transgressive. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so be aware that is lurking in the corners. If you engage with it too much,
it's very funny reading about the lore I like outside of the context of the game, because you start running into things that people have imbued, just words that people have imbued with a lot of meaning that have nothing, that just like stick out like a sore thumb, because like I don't like know the what the fuck man. This is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That or spring trap. Everybody's talking about It's like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Well, so that is the really was probably the highlight of this whole experience of you know, going through these videos with him, was just for fun, he clicked on the most recent video, and it does a little preview at the start of like, here's the questions we're gonna cover. Who is this? What is this? Now why does this person hate that? And it was just like proper noun avalanche of things that I had not heard reference at all yet in the games. So it's an interesting experience, again, having successfully avoided it and knowing nothing about it going in. These videos and discussions that were playing out over months and years to the rest of the audience, you know, that literally people are growing up alongside, I got to mainline over the course of a night. And seeing the way, like, you see patterns when you ingest it that way that you don't see when I'm sure you're, you know, there's this long delay. Yeah. And particularly that, like, you can very clearly tell that the community starts to realize, if this is ever figured out concretely, there's nothing left to talk about.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the videos are begging the creator, like, you know, almost like without quite saying it, but like, don't actually resolve anything next game, but give us lots of interesting clues, because that's how I get paid right now.
That basically just becomes like the Souls YouTube community, you know, or just like Elden Ring YouTubers and stuff. It's just like, is this just silly, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's very, very fun to watch it unfold. Very, very interesting window into like my friend's background and all that stuff.
I do like, I think this was one you played, because I think this is the third game where you're actually like running a pizza place.
And there was a free game released at some point that has you like buying equipment. Yeah, I don't know where that showed up in the sequence.
My favorite part of that is if you just don't like dumpster dive, the game is just a management sim.
That's pretty good.
But yeah, I will say by security breach is kind of when the gameplay gets decent. Unfortunately, that's the ninth game in the series.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's
but a eventually lot. It does get actual gameplay.
Yeah, I mean, I think before going into this, I would have, if someone had said, hey, can we go straight to a Five Nights at Freddy's lore video? Don't bother playing it. Let's just like look at this weird thing and see all the interesting takes on it. I would have resisted and be like, no, I need to play at least some of it. Now having actually like done that, I'm like, no, I could totally go straight to a lore video for a game or a series like this and get what it's about, because the discussion and just the, you know, the human brain as a pattern finding machine, even where there aren't patterns, is a fascinating thing to watch. And so that's part of what makes the lore videos and everything so fun.
Yeah.
So that really, that's the biggest new thing that I've been doing. And like I said, I've been watching it much more than I've been playing it.
Yeah. Well, everybody needs to learn about Five Nights at Freddy's sometime.
Well, that's the side of it that I didn't mention. So yeah, I was going to say it's right as my kids are getting to the age that like this is the playground discussion at their school. So I got to get primed for it. But my kiddos, like when we played it, I casted it up to the big screen TV in my basement and had like the sound for the room on. And my friend and my kids were all like down here. We were all kind of playing together. Which, you know, it has jump scares. It is tense, but
it's all jump scares. That's all it is.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. And there's jump scares and waiting between the jump scares. But it's not so intense that like my kids couldn't be in the room watching it and also kind of laughing along. And you know, the one of my kids that was the most into it was my 4-year-old. to the point that we went upstairs after playing a night or two, and we're eating dinner and talking, and Barrett is just yanking on my shirt, be like, "Dad, let's go play more Five Nights at Freddy's." He's not at all fazed, and totally amused by it. Milo, middle one, does not want to watch me play it, but then we go upstairs, and he has nothing but questions. And it's like, we need to get this kid watching the lore videos, because that's all he wants to know about. He doesn't want to watch it played because it's too scary for him, but he's very curious.
Kids hunger for lore.
The middle. Yes, they do. The kids hunger for lore. Yeah, so it's, again, with the one Five Nights at Freddy's original game that I played, I got to see my kids' reactions to it as well. Mm-hmm. Good. Testing the water is starting to get to a point where I can do more scary movies and interesting stuff with them. So we'll see how that goes.
That's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can appreciate the lore angle of the game, because I feel like my favorite movies is there's stuff like that where it's like, do a video essay of like what the interpretation is. But I'm still trying to understand the secret sauce of this game, where it's like, is it vague enough that it's like you can just attach any theory onto it? And that's what people have done and built up. Because if they've done this many iterations, what I'm guessing is that there's not like an intent, like this is supposed to mean that, and this is, you know, like that sort of thing. But
it's something that I've had to get accustomed to, like seeing past and just letting go, which is, everything is somebody's first exposure to something, you know, to something trope. And this was a piece of media shot so low. I'm not intentionally, I'm convinced, shot so low in the age bracket that it was a lot of kids like first exposure to just like fucking gutter horror tropes, you know, like So kids are getting the same thing that I got from, like, you know, being at a sleepover with a friend and having him describe like the meta plot to the Friday the 13th movies. Right.
Probably also in a similar thing, the first exposure to like what for us would have been the equivalent of like Mythos episodes of the X-Files or whatever, the first idea of like lore being a thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, and like, I play it and I don't see the appeal. And it's just like, well, no, you've got the antibodies. A thing I've been saying for more than a decade now. Like, you've got the antibodies.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. I think the other thing that supercharges it is, where with movies, everyone can watch the same 2-hour movie and kind of have the content and know what to, you know, what there is to discuss. With the games, a lot of it is like finding the hidden secrets and, oh, you can clip through the wall here, but it's actually meant to clip through, and now you're into a different area that gives. And so when a new game comes out, there is this rush to like explore every corner of the game to find those things and then turn that into theories that, it's like, it's like mixing meth into your crack or whatever.
Urban legends, but playground rumor kind of stuff. For us, it was rumors about how to revive Eris, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I thought you were going to say rumors that Marilyn Manson had a rib removed so he could suck his own dick, but
6 of 1.
I haven't seen the thing that about this series that I'm very curious about is actually the movies of, like, I don't know how you could, you know, in the game Five Nights at Freddy's, it has the advantage of kind of being fairly low poly, or not low poly, but, you know, I know, like, it's easy to just, like, the jump scare happens and then the game goes to black. How do you do the movie without it just being like a splatter fest?
Well, it has to be pitched to kids. So I've seen it. We did a we did an adaptation of K on it a couple years ago. And the way that they do it is there's not really a bunch of jump scares. There's very little gore. Like, weirdly, they turned it into a family drama where about like the middle third ish is like the kids playing with Freddy because he's actually possessed by a friendly, by one of the friendly dead kids, and they're trying to like relate to him or whatever.
Oh yeah, that happens at various points in some of the lore theories.
Yeah. Okay. It's weird the way that it becomes this family drama that has almost nothing to do with the location of Freddy's pizzeria. So what the fuck is a Fazbear? Sorry.
As a side note, and this is, again, just going off wherever, but that reminds me. Have any of you played Security Breach or no at all?
No.
That's like the 3D just, one. Like,
Yeah. Just riffing off of that, I love, like, one of the plot elements is, like, Freddy is a robot, or more explicitly, like, a robot as opposed to, like, an automaton in that. But it's very much like, you know, Freddy is you know, your friend and, you know, helping you and stuff like that. But it's like, but it's very important that you remember never to let my battery go low, because if you do, I will fucking kill you.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Cool. So Five Nights at Freddy's, sharing it with your kids.
Sharing it with my kids, well, getting immersed in it myself for the first time.
And, well, yes.
Yeah, intriguing to say the least.
Have there been any other games that have kind of fulfilled a similar role?
I mean, we said it, Dark Souls.
Okay, I guess I was more thinking, meaning like, you know, kind of kids.
Like for kids.
Viral
for kids.
Horror.
Oh!
Yeah. No, yeah, like Poppy Playtime. Like there are all kinds of like
point.
Fast follow on kind of ones like that.
Well, and I think there's also a category of like baby's first FPS and stuff. Like Splatoon probably falls in that category.
Not for lore,
but just a version of a genre
that
mixes it down to something that is accessible to kids. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, there is all this Splatoon lore with, like, how did humanity go extinct, but...
Yeah, I am. I have two things.
Yeah, go for it.
Again, continue being so wrapped up in other play. I started streaming a game called Total Chaos this past weekend. It's a very inappropriate title for it. Like we were joking we were joking on stream that like I hear Total Chaos and I think of like a Doom clone from like 1997. So like,
or like, not, like a Fusion Frenzy.
Yeah, maybe something like that. This is a first person horror game that feels like a throwback. Like this would have really been at home like a couple of years after Amnesia: The Dark Descent. You are a guy, like a Coast Guard guy who was responding to a distress signal in a storm, and you wash up on an island with an abandoned military base on it. And you're stranded there because you know, your ship gets wrecked up in the storm. And there's a voice on the radio telling you like, oh, you've got to cross the island. And it's pretty clear that the voice is you, some other you possibly, you know. And there's all kinds of oblique hints that, you know, because it has to have the psychological horror edge to it, that there's, you know, a dead wife and kids somewhere in the past. There's weird stuff about like medication in it. You know, just all of the usual like the horror game mishandling, psychological shit like that. But it's an island that is full of, you know, mutant monster kind of guys. And though you do find guns, the ammo is very limited. Mostly you're doing first person melee stuff with items that are, you know, craftable and have durability on them, and trying to babysit your various meters, you know, where you got to restore your health, but your health items raise your hunger, and then restoring your hunger, you know, it's just doing a balancing act kind of deal with it. The combat is real slow, which is again, very inappropriate for the name of it, but it feels appropriately hefty, you know, with, you know, strong, heavy attacks. The melee item reach and like weight has a lot to do with it. There's like a parry system to it because everything has to have that. Like, it's so weird because everything about this feels like it's just ticking boxes, but it's ticking boxes in this like distinctly like 2013 way. That is pretty neat. Like, there's even like a Weeping Angels encounter in it, and it's like, oh, I remember when everything was doing this. Oh yeah, you know. But it's like they've got a cool, you know, so when I say Weeping Angels, Angel, you know what I mean, right? I've never seen that episode of Doctor Who, but it's when you're not looking at something, it only moves when you're not looking at it. So you have to stay, you know, stay focused, right?
It's a horror trope that translates very well to video games.
Oh, it's made for video games. It's really good. like you end up needing to like manage the sight line to it. So like it's not even like, oh, if your back is turned, it's like if you cannot see it. So you have to like realize, okay, I can't get close to it, but like it will, if I walk around a corner, it will rush and shuffle up like right to the point where I, you know, turn, where I can see it. So you have to manage your distance from it. And there are steam valves you can turn to create barriers. And they're only open for a limited time. So like you have to kind of like set up and know roughly what you're going to do. Get in a position where it's going to be far away. You turn on the steam valve and then rush and do what you can while it's delayed by the steam, and hope that by the time you have, you know, put together everything that you need to, that you can turn around and stop it from chasing you at a place where it hasn't cornered you. So like, that's just like one scene, but it took me a long time because it was actually like really tricky and involved to figure out how to execute on. So it was a novel, you know, implementation of an idea that's been done to death. Right.
Yeah.
The trial and error was fun versus frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, you know, it didn't get to the point where I was like, okay, this is ridiculous. Like, I quickly learned what I had to do. Like, oh, you can't shoot it because it'll explode and you'll die, et cetera. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Moxie.
The thing I noticed that was interesting is most implementations of like this sort of thing I've seen kind of do a almost like a super speed type thing where like the creature moves fast enough when you're not looking at that effectively teleports. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this, it explicitly like, yeah, it runs, but like it runs at about a human speed.
Yeah.
And that, it was interesting, that seemed to give it a much different feel to the game, because mm-hmm. like you, it wasn't so much like, oh, like it's super important never to look away, so much as it was like, oh, I need to, you know, kind of ration how often I look away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was neat. Yeah. Something else that it's doing is there is a sanity system, but it is not something that you, take by looking at the, you don't take sanity damage by looking at the enemies. And I just found this like, you know, 3-4 hours in, but you find pills that will induce the madness. And what it does is it like warps the environment. So you take it and then like the next corner that you're around, it wasn't the hallway that you saw before. Like now it's all like meaty, like you're, you know, like walking through a throat. Right. And, you know, it's like, you know, gnarly or whatever. And so you have to like intentionally go into these states and like manage your pill supply to like use that specifically to get around obstacles, blocked, like certain, things that are blocked. Yeah.
Certain paths are unlocked in the crazy world versus sane world.
Yeah.
Dope.
Yeah. I'm curious just how like that's going to be. Life. Yep. There's a lot of doors open mm-hmm. and close
and windows.
Yeah. but um uh Yeah, I'm curious how that's going to be implemented, like when the pills, when like pill resource management kind of like enters more into it. And I'm also curious for like when the visuals of the Madness world are going to open up, because like in the promo images and the videos, like it implies that there's some really surreal stuff that I just kind of like, you know, haven't seen yet. And I'm wondering if concurrent with that, like the actual story is going to get better. Are there going to be things that are, you know, that are hitting me unexpectedly with this? So like, you know, right now it's resting at like a high, like, oh yeah, you know, just like the appeal of this is this cozy throwback kind of thing. But there is like, it's kind of like constantly on the edge of this, you know, potential for something that could be, you know, cooler, more inventive. And then it just becomes frustrating because it's like, why did you bury it so late? from a pacing perspective, right?
I feel like if there isn't some very meaningful jank, is it really a horror game?
There's plenty of jank here.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying though. Like they had to, you know, make sure they had enough jank to qualify. Otherwise, you get kicked out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, absolutely. This is, you know, this is my argument that I'm making. A lot of the time, it's always going to be janky.
In case anyone is curious, this developer has another game. I think it's the only other game called Turbo Overkill. So between Total Chaos and Turbo Overkill,
yeah,
I feel like these names are overpromising.
They're terrible at naming shit. Like this is from an era of naming that is like it is just Duke Nukem expansions.
Yeah. No, it's a noir detective thing. It's like a Turbo Overkill.
Absolute madness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Total overkill. Yeah.
To be fair, Turbo Overkill does actually look like a Duke Nukem expansion.
It does. Yeah, it looks.
This is the one with the chainsaw legs.
Yes, rocket jumping chainsaw legs, mechs. Very twitchy. Yeah. Maybe delivers on the promise a little better. If you're going for a vibe based on the name, that's the way you want to go.
Yeah.
Going for an interesting horror game throwback.
Yeah.
Sounds like Total Chaos is your way.
There's one like final design decision on this that I want to like make a note of, which is you don't see this happen very often, which is the map system. There is and isn't one. So like you will find a map, but it is a document that you reference and you have to orient, you know, based on the landmarks that you have found.
I like that.
It's like the Thief games in that way. It's always satisfying to do that on a stream. It makes me feel like an idiot because I'm always circling back on myself.
I also wanted to ask, music wise. So apparently one of the composers they have is Akira Yamoka.
He did the main theme, which I have not heard yet. Yeah.
Okay.
The Silent Hill composer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, seems like a bit of a pedigree behind this team. Reason to trust that there's, good stuff on the way.
I'm curious what this person made before, because I don't know if he just like, cause you can just pay, if you just offer money to somebody, they'll do something. If you pay them, if you pay them to do it. let's see here. Total Chaos. I need to see what else this person had done, like what his pedigree is.
The only other game on the developer, at least, was the I've already forgotten the name, Turbo Overkill.
The developer's name is Sam Preble. Which is a Tim and Eric ass name. I love that name. They previously did art and graphics. They were the senior artist on Ashen, that kind of flat shaded Souls like game from several years back. Yeah. Cool. Good for him pulling Akira Yamoka.
I will say, like, as dumb as the name is, like, Turbo Overkill is actually a game I've heard of that, like, people that are into the boomer shooter stuff, like...
Yeah, yeah. People in the chat were like, oh, yeah, no, this guy, like, this is legit, you know? Like, yeah. The only other thing that I have, and I don't have a lot to say about it other than this exists and I didn't know about it, and maybe other people might be happy to see this. Are any of you aware of like a website or service called Puzmo?
No.
Nope.
Okay. Puzmo is a game that is like an alternative to like New York Times games or whatever, that is founded by somebody I don't know named Orta. Oh. I'm unaware of what else they have developed, but the name that I know of theirs is Zach Gage, mobile game developer from way back, got really big for Spell Tower, the kind of like word find combo building game. Also did really bad chess, which is like chess puzzles with like loadouts and like starting positions that are impossible within the game. You know, like how do you win this chess puzzle with like four knights, something like that. So what this is, like they just like put together all of their old like iOS games and decided we can just make this into like a subscription service for like $40 a year. I found out about it because somebody I follow on Blue Sky posted about a sale. So I just got a year membership of this for $20. And like every day it is a new one of these puzzle games. Like I'm here because they have a really good implementation of a word search. Not a word search, fuck, crossword puzzle. But there's like a super novel, like Sudoku, like it's combination Sudoku and memory kind of deal. And like, it's just every day there is a new one of each of these puzzles. There's a new type shift. There's a new like spatial puzzle called Flip Art. And so like I got this today, and just while I was waiting for some stuff to process, I was just like poking at it. And I was like, oh, I could see this being a really nice little ritual. No single one of these games is enough to like base a grind segment on, because what is there to say about a crossword puzzle? But a very good and nearly limitless and growing library of well-designed crossword puzzles. Cool. I'm in. I'm down.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, you don't have to give any money to the New York Times.
Yes, I do not have to fund my own my own eradication or a genocide machine. Yeah.
That's good.
So I just wanted
to
bring a heads up. Like I just, you know, I like Zach Gage's games in the past, and to find out like, oh, this is what he's doing. And it is just a whole bunch of the stuff that he was doing, but now in an ongoing way. It's like, yeah, I dig it. I'll throw money at this.
I mean, for every person that was like, yeah, I just get the New York Times for the crossword, this is your site. This is where you land.
You have no excuse anymore. I don't think there's a Wordle. There's not like a Wordle stand-in, but how much tread was left on those tires anyway? Like, come on.
Yeah, I'm looking at one now that's Circuits, which is like a word association kind of game. Where you know, guessing one clue gives you then, you know, more clues towards the next word. And you kind of, you know, are trying to fill out the whole thing.
Yeah. It's like a chart of compound words. So like, there are two boxes that point to a blank box, and like one of the boxes says mic check one. And then the other one says a thing or, and it's like, okay, two. Okay. A thing or two. Can you know, just finish the phrase, finish the compound thing. And then like, two, and then Greenwich mean, what is the thing that would bridge those? Oh, time. Okay. Mm-hmm. Two time, Greenwich mean time, right? On and on, you're filling out this grid in a logical way. Really satisfying. I dig it.
Yes,
Puzmo.
Oh, good find.
Good name too. I didn't find it. It was Stella on Blue Sky. So
nice. Yeah. Puzz feels like it's derogatory though on its own.
Yeah.
Can't shorten it further. You getting into that puzz?
Yeah, no,
I've always
thought this. Like this was an old like those damn Ross kids bit where just talking about like just it was Puzz 3D. It sounds so unsavory. Like Puzz is like something you say that something is dripping with it. Oh, it's dripping with Puzz. And I was like, I don't care. That's unsavory.
There's no other vowel you can put in that combination of letters that does not result in something bad. So
yeah. But Puzmo is a very cute name. I like it. Puzmo. That's all I got.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I wanted to know about the exceptions that prove the rule. So there's all these things that are kind of generally just bad choices for video games. But then there's that one game where it kind of works and is good. So what are those games that have managed to make a mechanic or idea work in a way that it just hasn't in other games?
Yeah. I'll get started here with Case, who gives us kind of a longer answer in our Slack, saying, I'm generally not a fan of limited time FOMO stuff in live service games. Part of the reason I've played Honkai Star Rail more than Genshin Impact, for example, is that Honkai Star Rail's special events kind of stick around. For example, officially, the Fate/Unlimited Blade Works collab is over, but I can still pull for characters and still do the quest line. My exception for this is Hitman Elusive Targets. Fuck. All right. Back to the drawing board. Now, I do have the caveat that I don't play the current Hitman actively, but I do watch people play it online. And I've noticed from these streams that they leave the content up for a while. And if they do cycle it out, they'll generally also cycle it back in later. In the spirit of that, I'm shocked they don't have a Gavle Goat elusive target. What is Gavle Goat?
The Gavle Goat.
I have no idea. It's a Swedish. It's a Christmas display of like a big like wicker goat thing. Oh man, Agent 47
Hitman.
It's not. They were very shocked that there is not a target. Like, oh god, like what if? Okay, you roll up to Summer Isle. And you're like, all right, what are we gonna do? Hitman, who's the target? It's this fucking nerd cop. it's this stupid nerd version. we need to kill him by any means necessary. In 47, just being in disguise all over the island, trying to conspire to get the cop into the Wicker Man.
You can have a bear costume.
Wrong movie. You did the one thing that would piss me off, Ben.
Well, can I redeem myself by saying Hitman Odyssey, where he has to get in a horse to sneak into Troy and kill someone?
That is not the Odyssey.
Is that the Iliad?
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the Iliad was the War on Troy. So yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really.
Digging yourself deeper.
Is there any other embarrassing thing you want to say?
No, I'm just turning my camera off.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Moxie?
My favorite iteration of this, just because it makes so little sense, is there was a Hitman Elusive Target where Eminem hires you to kill Slim Shady.
Wow.
Oh god, just to see if Slim Shady is, and you have to identify by the behavior the real one. It's the one that stood out, by the way. Mm-hmm. All of our bones are dust. I don't know that anybody realizes that. Let's see. Moxie, what does Shishi Shibumi say?
Sorry, I'm being attacked by electronics. Shishi Shibumi says, lengthy cutscenes that attempt to ape movies, and Indiana Jones and the Great Circle is the only one where the cutscenes are not only additive, but understand cinema at a deep level. Wolfenstein, yes, that'll be the sequel.
Yeah, that's ICP. You're trying to instigate the great carnival or whatever it is.
Yeah, you smash carnival. A glass and say, Oppenstein.
Different thing. Are you ready to embarrass? Like, everybody's just making an ass of themselves.
Wolfenstein is also good, but significantly less cinematic.
The cutscenes in the Great Circle are really good.
Yeah, I feel like
it's also backed up by really good play too. So,
I feel like it probably helps that, like, you know, Indiana Jones was a movie first and a game second. So
that's something
feels a little bit more appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the groundwork was laid.
And Troy Baker's Harrison Ford is really good. Kind of disappears into it. Yeah. Nice. Ben, what does Double Cakes say?
Double Cakes says, no love for when a game forces the player to slow down to let an ally or NPC follow, but there's a part of Final Fantasy 15 where a character has been gravely wounded. Their movement speed and battle capabilities are greatly reduced. They're a liability, and it's pathetic and sad, but it should be.
That is a trick. Yeah. And I'm just not realizing why the post image is Ico.
Because
the escort mission. There we go. It's always a fun game to try to game out the logic. So
where's my mind go? Yeah.
Yeah. Because I've had to post these, and it's really hard to come up with the image to post.
Yeah.
Yeah.
good catch though.
Yeah, round us out, Dennis. How about you? What does Callum say?
Yeah, Callum says, generally I'm not a fan of points of interest in open world maps in games. In Cyberpunk 2077, however, I found the design of the world, the cool side stories you find, combined with really enjoying what you are doing in the game, made me clear the map. Oh man, this was Saints Row the Third for me, where it was like, oh, yeah. Oh man, open world slop, and then somehow I wound up at 100%ing that map.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Yeah. Both 3 and 4 are really good for that. It's like the shit you do is fun. Mm-hmm. It probably isn't enough to maintain a whole game, but the insurance fraud stuff in Saints Row 3 is so good. Like, that is such a good inversion of like a burnout crash mode.
Yep.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So my answer, kind of progressing timeline where stuff becomes missable if you're not at the right place at the right time, can be a real bummer, but like, I've only played the first one, so I don't know if they do anything different with it, but like that ends up being like the interesting thing about Dead Rising.
Oh, that is not where I thought you were going with that.
Yeah, what did you think I was going to say?
I was thinking Way of the Samurai.
Oh, yeah, Way of the Samurai. Pathologic does this really well, too. Just like very good implementations of like, you know, what has been used as like either an excuse for tedium, like in Shenmue or something like that, or just a way to, make something more obscure and harder to solve what is relatively straightforward to see The Last Express. Although The Last Express does have like a time travel kind of thing to it, regardless.
I would say it's funny. So the most recent Dead Rising like gets rid of that, and it is amazing how much worse the game is for that.
Yeah. It's just people complained about that, saying like, oh my gosh, I feel so stressed, and et cetera. And it's like, that's what makes it interesting. Like, it's not the putting chainsaws on shit. Like, that's fun, but no, like the thing that makes this a really unique game is that pressure that you're feeling. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Moxie, how about you?
Oh man, this is a tough one. One that comes to mind is QuickTime events.
Okay.
I feel like that needs no, introduction.
One's raising their eyebrow at that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. However, I feel like where it shines is like active reload.
Oh yeah.
My theory is that like there's a certain degree to which like sometime what a game needs is not to be in strictly speaking harder, but to give you like something you have to do with your hands while you're doing other things.
It's not particularly hard. It's just timing, and you're gonna, right. You know, but like it's a way to get a little, it is a way to get a little win, you know, mm-hmm. like when you just do it and it doesn't really matter. It's like, haha, yes. But also it makes these moments of drama where you would not have won this encounter if you didn't, you know, nail the right. timing exactly. on that by exactly. chance or by luck or whatever, and then just do what you need to.
It's also a system you can choose to engage with or not. Like if you're too worried about failing, you can just be like, let it pass.
Mm-hmm. Another like honorable bench on that one. And I think this one probably will be more controversial, but I actually liked the quick time events in some of the Resident Evil games, particularly 5, where like during boss fights, you could like dodge attacks and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think maybe part of that's because it wasn't like a binary, like do this or repeat the segment.
Yeah. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
I think for me, because it's top of mind, I would say Asbury Pines for like an idle game where it's like, usually I don't like that sort of like artificial gate. And it always kind of feels like it's, I don't know, just like a useless barrier, I guess. But in this time, in this particular game, it's like, why don't you take a couple hours and go either do something else or like think about the story that's like progressing so far. And yeah, I found it much more valuable in that context. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. Idle games can be frustrating. I have a little bit of that compulsive loop in me, you know, like I've gotten into a couple of idle games in my time, it does kind of work out to, I am building this so as not, I like the, I keep not playing this game, can't be playing this game.
Right. Forgotten Realms one, highly recommend.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think I tried that when you were talking about it a lot way back when, and it just didn't stick with me for some reason. Maybe I'll try it again. And Dennis, is your example just eco? Did I ruin it? Did I ruin it by solving your puzzle?
No. I mean, that is a very good example. But I feel like Escort Quest got covered. So, I'm trying to figure out a way to say this to precisely represent what I mean. But it's like games where they're trying to like parody or do commentary on the like, okay, you know, colonialist troops are bad, and they do that by being like, yeah, we're super fucking awesome, let's kill everyone, wah! You know, through the entire thing. Uh-huh. It's like that form of satire just does not land well for me. Like that's just looking at something and going at it doesn't have enough,
just being loud
substance. Yeah, it doesn't have enough substance to be like, well, okay, well, still my main verb in this game is killing indigenous people or whatever. Picking a random example.
See Resident Evil 5.
Right.
Although it weirdly that is not oorah about it.
Yeah, but all these games that are oorah, even though it's a sarcastic look at how bad it is to be oorah thing, it's like still ultimately what you're doing is the oorah, you know, whatever. So that doesn't land for me, except the one game that's ever pulled it off for me is Broforce. And I think it has that Tropic Thunder element where they just went so incredibly over the top that it worked. But no one will ever be able to replicate it or like go that hard again. It's like the sheer audacity of how ridiculous they went with it got them a pass for something that I generally kind of have a bit of distaste for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, Eco is a great escort game. Play that.
Which one is a great escort game?
Eco. I said Eco.
Eco, yeah. It's classic. Broforce is also helped by everything in it being a very thinly veiled movie parody, right? The 80s action movie thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, I don't see a world where you could replicate what they did simply because Broforce already exists, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have to be in a different form or a little while, little ways down the line.
Yeah. There will never be a Tropic Thunder 2. God, I hope not. Tropic Thunder was kind of nailed what it was going for.
I would call out Helldivers 2 does a pretty good job of that.
Yeah. A little, yeah. I was thinking about that because it is the whole for democracy, for managed democracy and all that stuff. It still comes off as a little too earnest. Like, I can't play that in the current climate and not, I don't know.
Just yeah. Like,
oh man, this is, it's the Starship Troopers thing of no parody can be so over the top that some people don't understand that it's parody.
Yeah.
However, including I feel like Broforce is the one game that makes it. Yeah. Sometimes. So, good stuff.
So can I give one more answer to this question?
Yes.
Loading screens, not good. However, the like door opening animation in the early Resident Evils, one just really does it for me aesthetically. And it's kind of the like, gives you just enough time to be like, wait, did I leave a zombie behind that door?
just a fun little dread builder. It's a wonderful decision. One of the best decisions ever made in games was to not hide loading screens that way, but represent them that way. And I mean, they paid it off pretty quick, but like turning that into a jump scare of its own in Resident Evil 2 specifically, when you open the door out behind the like in the cabin, the like little hut outside the station, and then no, this is not a loading screen. It is showing the zombies breaking through like into your face as you open the door for them. Yeah. Wonderful. Just so good. Good question, Dennis. Thank you for posting it. And thank you so much, everybody who responded. If you would like to participate in multiplayers, you can go and follow us on Blue Sky, the levelpodcast.bsky.social, and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. We'll save this here and then also in the admin. By right now, the title of the year poll should be up. You have until, let's say, the end of the day on Sunday, Sunday, December the 14th. So the end of Duckstream. You have until the end of Duckstream to vote.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. That gives you a day, Dennis, to tabulate and what have you. Right.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'm excited. This is always a fun cap to the year.
Yeah. Fun little self-indulgent thing. Just so watch for that little poll to go up. We'll post about it on Patreon and such. I think that's what we got. That's the end of the segment.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about the things that are happening in the world of video games and how we feel about them. I'm going to sandwich the two AI stories that we have between stuff that is not that, so we can end on something that is not us just pissing and moaning about something that people know we don't approve of. So people can probably guess how we feel about Roblox, the game that kids play. I saw Roblox for the first time Thanksgiving. Two of my younger family members had their iPads, the like ridiculously like foam armored little tablets that they were playing some kind of Roblox game on. I asked like, what is that? And it says Roblox. And okay, yeah, that looks god awful.
You faded away into dust immediately.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that. Do your kids play Roblox? Do you?
No, for whatever reason, they kind of fallen off of Fortnite too. So
okay,
they're very into Legend of Zelda now, and watch a good amount of Minecraft content, but they don't play it as much. But those are Zelda and Minecraft are the two big ones in my house right now.
Okay.
I'll keep them away from Roblox as long as I can.
Yeah, for a lot of good reasons, which we're going to enumerate here. So the CEO of Roblox, what's this fucker's name? David Baszucki was on a podcast, which sounds god awful in and of itself. It's a podcast hosted by Kevin Roos, the most credulous man alive. I think a columnist who sometimes works for the New York Times, who like is just believes any AI hype that is ever brought up. Like just a ridiculous person who is either like on the take or just like can't be trusted around a stove.
Or he himself is AI.
No, he did talk about like his marriage was endangered because he fell in love with an AI.
Oh, fuck that guy.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So, and then also Casey Newton, a name I recognize, but I don't have as much dirt on as Kevin Roos. But they were interviewing this villain, the CEO of Roblox, and talking about stuff like Roblox's pedophile problem. calling Roblox the place where predators go to find kids. And the CEO was saying like, yeah, no, we're trying like, you know, AI face recognition to do age verification and stuff like that. And it's like, you realize all of that data is going to leak. What you're doing is creating a Denny's menu for pedophiles, right? Like,
oh, fuck, yeah,
it's fucking awful.
Not to be that guy now that I've spent 2 hours watching videos, but a significant plot point in Five Nights at Freddy's 2 is they try to give the new animatronics programs to recognize faces of children versus potential child predators and all that. So it's all just recursive badness all the way down.
Yeah, I don't care for that at all. This guy, this fucking asshole, is also talking about building a dating platform into Roblox, this game for children. and then the thing that made me bring this article here, because we have to get everything bad about the world into one game. Where one of the hosts on this podcast brought up like, oh, you know, just like if you thought about building like poly market into this, like build a prediction market, like, you know, work in gambling, you know, and the CEO said that sounds very fun and obvious. I love that. I actually think it's a brilliant idea if it can be done in an educational way that's legal. And so imagine no free Robux, the game's paid currency, no free prizes, just a game called Dress to Impress Predictor, where it's not like trying to get kids money or anything like that. I would be a big fan of it.
What does that even mean?
Building a gamble, like just like building in predicting, you know, like just like placing wagers using in-game currency that doesn't hooked up to real currency directly anyway, right? You know, where people can like bet on little competitions or whatever, trying to get kids into betting, doing speculation on prediction market kind of stuff. Gambling is ruining our fucking society. That makes me sound like a fucking moralizing person, but sports gambling is everywhere. Young men specifically are in horrible amounts of debt because of sports betting, because of any kind of betting, you know, because of, you know, poly market and shit like that. It is genuinely corrosive. We live in a sewer beneath a vampire's casino. Is the world that we live in. And this guy is out here is like just taking a kind of tongue in cheek question and saying, yeah, we should totally make a gambling machine for kids.
Yeah.
I
hadn't thought of that before. I guess Soylent Green could be a really marketable product.
people need to eat.
Yeah.
Ben, well, you were going to say something.
I mean, like having worked in the gambling industry, I was always like, confused by people who like justified it, because it just seems like such a simple proposition where it's like, oh, it's taking away money from the customers and giving it to whoever made the thing. Yeah. And even like whatever, like the most justification that I ever heard for it is like, A, it's entertainment, or B, it's people who have like addictions to like rushes and stuff like that. But it's like, but because you have that, you shouldn't cater to those needs the same way that you shouldn't cater to like an alcoholic's needs. Like you shouldn't build a thing to help them out with that or like encourage that behavior. So it's like,
and you certainly shouldn't nourish it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, what he's describing in this is like grooming applied to gambling.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just don't see, because I just don't understand like why it's like socially permissible to like have gambling. It's like even the entertainment argument, it's like, okay, you can find other things to be entertained by that doesn't just take away your money.
Yeah. So. And like, well, you know, I'm generally permissive about like a casino or something. Like, I don't think they should be everywhere, but like, I don't know, whatever, a building that you go to do something. But the fact that they're all in people's fucking phones, that every single podcast ad that I hear is about sports betting, about parlays, you know, you know, just play casino games on your phone. Like, no, you shouldn't be able to do this like all the time. I know I'm fucking moralizing, but like, I'm not even saying like, oh, you're going to go to hell. Like, it is a fucking rot. It is just a way to siphon more money upwards. It is evil.
There's a difference when it's like a state lotto that goes into like whatever state programs there are, which even that you could argue about like how much the money's going where, but there's a difference between that and like a private company that's like, we're going to set up here and give jobs, quote unquote, to an area. But then it's like,
I would draw the lines on, I think there's a difference between institutionalized gambling for profit of the institution versus like, hey, I bet you $5 you can't make this shot, like between friends.
Oh yeah. No, yeah. That's absolutely, it's its own kind of thing.
I do have to say, there is one thing that Polymarket did that I think is hilarious, which is there is a ongoing, like, I don't know what they call them, bets or whatever, for when will the rapture happen.
Okay, yeah.
And they just have a prop bet on it. That entertains me.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, I know I have a very left view of this, but I would extend this to, like, Wall Street futures trading, where it's like,
oh, yeah, no.
That.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I never understood, like, you know, I'm generally tend to be, like, as long as we're doing the capitalism thing, like, you need investments, but, like, I don't understand, like, but do we need, like, you know, inverse short future past investments or whatever?
Like, yeah, no, I don't know, the financial crisis of 2008 and fucking learning about Enron even before that. It's just like, oh yeah, no, this is all just gambling. Like, we're just building everything. It's a fucking castles built on sand here. And that's why AI, speculation is fucking awful. And Bitcoin, it's not an actual asset. It is, any crypto is just a speculative, anyway. So speaking of CEOs who suck, I knew it was going to be Tim Sweeney. What's Tim Sweeney up to, the CEO of Epic?
Yeah, I was going to say, I wasn't sure which way you're going to segue when you said CEOs that suck. This one was my story. It was just talking about the change to Steam, where they're now having games disclose to what degree they use AI. And so you can see on the page of a game, I think it's like right above the system requirement, like it'll have a note from the developer where they have to say like to what degree they used AI in their games.
They've had this for a while. They desperately need a way to filter out, just say, like, don't even fucking show me something that has a positive AI disclosure. But
yeah. So this, I guess the news story around this is Tim Sweeney was mocking this, or was quoted to say like that this was like a useless thing to have. And then I think the joke he said was like, you know, they need to disclose what toothpaste like their developers use, and they're like, and saying that
why stop at AI use? He doubled down. We could have mandatory disclosures for what shampoo brand the developer uses. The shampoo is made up of like artists' money and the work they've done that has somehow been liquefied and turned into, you know, an emulsion that will clean somebody's hair, I will want to know about it. But this is a bad faith comparison.
Yeah, so the secondary story of like, oh, this is a pretty good feature they have on Steam is, oh, Tim Sweeney does not know what customers want, which is evident by the games that are put out. But anyway, this just confirms that.
Yeah. It's just fucking terrible. Like, you know, you're smarter. You absolutely know that is not the same fucking thing. You know that that's not what people are upset about.
Yeah, it's just that there needs to be a narrative that AI is important and worth investing money into from a lot of big tech companies. And so
And what he's arguing for is people don't deserve to know is what he is saying, right? Yeah. Like, oh, it's just everybody's going to be doing it. Nobody needs to be held to account, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's the liar's dividend, right?
Well, so I can understand someone saying everyone is going to be using AI enough. You will never find a game that doesn't have it. So we don't need it. Like that at least is coherent, even though I disagree with it. This like bad faith comparison isn't even coherent.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's almost, this isn't, I'm kind of mixing metaphors or idioms or whatever, but it's almost the exception that proves the rule, by which I mean, it almost feels like he had to choose a bad faith comparison.
Because there was no good faith one that made him look good.
Well, and because like so many of the things you could compare to of like, oh yeah, well, do you want to specify like which of these products was made in like Russia? It's like, yeah, actually, yeah, I would love that. Like, no, I feel like so many of the like socially conscious like things he could have used as examples, like if you actually gave people the option, they'd be all about that.
Yeah. Yeah,
actually, I don't want to know if these clothes were made in sweatshops.
Yeah,
exactly.
I want to know if this, let's take the shampoo. I want to know if this shampoo, in order to get this to market, they decided let's cut some corners and just cut eyelids off of rabbits and rub the shampoo formulas into it and see how irritated they get. An actual thing in animal testing. I'm not like a PETA person, but oh yeah, yeah. No, animal testing is fucking horrible. It's not just like let's give chinchillas perms. yeah.
Also, funny thing. Giving a chinchilla a perm would actually be fairly abusive because if chinchillas get wet, all of their hair falls out.
It's. I want to know. I want to know if they if they did that. Yeah, fuck this guy. Fuck Tim Sweeney.
Yep.
Yeah.
Steam you didn't sandwich, so now we get a double dose of positivity to end. Mm. Or at least non-AI relatedness.
Yeah, so we have a little bit more AI stuff to do. Moxie, how did Amazon show its entire ass?
So this one's at least actually pretty funny. So they started doing... And granted, in their defense, it was listed as like an experimental feature, you know, that sort of thing, but not much of a defense of AI generated dubbing for anime, particularly on a anime called Banana Fish, which was the end result was that the AI dubbing was just slightly better than like a speech to text style thing.
just use it, like we just plugged it in Dr. Spatzo. just
yep.
Yeah, just the fitter, happier voice, just reading off the lines.
Yeah, which gets really, really funny. Definitely pull up clips of this because like. It's really funny because I heard a YouTuber point out like the core problem here is that the AI has no concept of context. So, there's a scene where like a little kid gets shot and like he's playing like don't you die on me that sort of thing, except it's read just as like don't you die on me you rascal.
come on don't die, come on.
And it's on, made even better from the fact that like apparently I had to look it up because with this like horrible delivery, I had no idea what's going on. Apparently in this thing, like Banana Fish is the name of like a street drug that this guy's a cop that he's trying to investigate. But again, in complete like monotone, him being like, did Banana Fish do this to you? you know, just like interrogating people about this like nonsense name. It's, I know, it's, they did not make a good dub. They did inadvertently make some amazing comedy.
If they had done it intentionally to make fun of AI, it would be very funny.
Oh, yeah, exactly. They have since like axed this and been like, yeah, that was a mistake.
I don't mean to be conspiratorial, but no, it fucking wasn't. That was a trial balloon.
When I say a mistake, I mean, a mistake in that, like,
it was a mistake. A mistake, not an accident.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
We're sorry we got caught.
Yeah.
Right.
To do fucking dubbing too, like, there are so many considerations that go into that. There's a great documentary, primarily produced by John DiMaggio, the voice of Bender. It was made like 12 years ago or something now. It's called I Know That Voice. That's all about voice acting. And there are all kinds of little chapters, and you just, you learn stuff. Like I find it super interesting, obviously, but like, I think everybody will see something there. There are two things you learn. Nobody fucking likes to do video game voiceovers because it's nothing but screaming all day. It ruins your voice. And that was a huge thing for the union, negotiations. And you're like, you can't be paying us less for this because this is actually jeopardizing our ability to do other work. The other thing is, everybody needs to cut their teeth doing anime dubbing. And if you take that away from the industry, there is almost no way up for a new person into this. Fucking Bryan Cranston did anime dubbing for Studio Ghibli stuff early on. You know, I think he was a voice in like Nausicaa and the Valley of the Wind or something like that. And a lot of decisions go into not just making sure you are delivering things correctly, but matching the mouth flaps. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's a fucking skill. And to think that AI can do that as well as a person, you know, who has judgment and discretion is hubris. They are trying to feed people shit.
That's as short-sighted as not hiring entry-level programmers because you think AI is going to do the job. But surely no one's doing that. So,
surely there haven't been three major internet outages this fucking month.
The other thing I think is just the, like, translation in general is an art, not a science. So, like,
oh yeah, no, localization, absolutely.
Yeah. So, like, something that came with this and the video I watched on this, and Greg, this is a little bit more conspiratorial, but speculating, like, was even the subtitles AI, because it's super. All of the dialogue is basically the most basic way you could say, you know, whatever the dialogue is, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
you know, like, I don't know, I guess the main character in this is like a former action star or whatever. And like some guy's just like, are you that guy? I love that movie you were in. Like, it's like, I'm pretty sure you might have just word for word translated this.
Like, yeah. I know that like Funimation or Crunchyroll, I guess they're the same fucking company now. Because we live in a fucking just. But no, they were caught using AI subs as well. Yeah. Anyway, something that does not have to do with AI. Round us out here, Dennis. We got a VGA story here.
Yeah, I thought this was interesting. Mostly wanted to share just to get people's take on it. So Team Cherry is nominated for several awards, but kind of announced or made it known that they're not going to be at the awards ceremony, which, you know, fine, based, whatever, you know, like that's totally fine for them. But the way they went about it, just felt very weird to me and like hipsterish to almost a self-parody level. So specifically the quote, the co-founder said, you know, oh, we're we're not going to be there. This year, I think we're safe. I think Expedition 33 will win everything. And then said it's exceptional and broadly palatable. Mm-hmm. Going to come back to
yeah.
broadly. Whereas we're on that knife's edge where it appeals to some and infuriates others. And like, say, don't go to the Game Awards. Totally fine. Say you're not going to go to the Game Awards. Great.
Yeah.
Say, why are you taking shots at another game that's going to be there? What yeah. the fuck?
Because they're edgelords. Like,
I guess I don't. So I wanted to see like this. This read to me as like the Uber hipster. Like we need to make sure that we are people don't get us or something like that. I just wanted to see gut check if I'm reading that correctly.
My gut check on this is that it is kind of a combination of sour grapes and poor sportsmanship is the way that it is the way that it reads. Say like, hey, we're based in Australia. Getting to LA is actually a really big, you know, they're in fucking Adelaide, which I think is like the worst place to get to LA from. Like on that fucking
just
continent.
Dig a hole straight down and you can get there.
Yeah. Yeah, just like, oh, you know, we're hard at work on the DLC or something like that. Say, you know, we're honored to be that. There are lots of very tactful ways about it. And, you know, I don't think you have to hand it to Jeff Keighley or the Game Awards, but at least hand it to your peers and don't
yeah.
take like swipes. Right.
Yeah. So, I wanted to see, has anyone used the term broadly palatable in a non-dig fashion? Like in a non-derogatory fashion.
I mean, I can imagine it. I didn't read this as an attack personally, but like I just read it as saying like, oh, it's like a wide audience likes this. Like to me, it's like the same way as like Baldur's Gate, where everyone loved that game, and that swept the Game Awards the year it came out. So I just kind of read it as like, hey, we're working on the DLC, we're not going to be able to show up, and they're gonna and just like jokingly said that they're gonna win everything. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I will say
they also called it exceptional, right? Like. That I think softens it too. Like, oh, it's exceptional and broadly palatable. I think that there probably were better ways to phrase it, but at least it has that exceptional in there.
Maybe like,
I would say, though, I feel like this also has to be read in terms of like the just absolute shit discourse that, Hollow Knight or Silk Song or whatever had.
Oh yeah, video game difficulty discourse. Yeah,
like awful. This is a game. This is probably the biggest game that like I should like that I'll probably never play again just because the discourse on it like makes me hate the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that is the other thing is this felt like it was leaping through hoops to mention that discourse in something that doesn't have any business being about it. Again, so we're not going to be at the Game Awards. That's because Expedition 33 is going to win everything. Expedition 33 is broadly palatable. We are not. Some people like us and some people don't because we're so difficult. It's like, God, you drove around the block to get to that point.
We're an acquired taste. Feels a little humble, braggy. I don't take swipes at your peers, right? Like you got no beef with these guys.
or read what you write with a skeptical eye before you send it to be in front of millions of people. Just, you know, spend a second thinking about how you'll come off.
Although I feel like you, if you do that, are you allowed to be a CEO? Because like between that Epic guy, what's his name with like poor people shouldn't play Borderlands or whatever.
Yeah, Pitchford.
What's his
making face? Making first person shooters great again, like. Maybe CEOs should just stop talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the one group that is actually threatened to have their jobs meaningfully replaced by AI.
I don't know that this person is a CEO though. They're a co-founder. I think they actually do work as opposed to yeah. So that is
yeah, we'll see.
That is something there. All of this holds unless you take the read that I'm going to take, which is they are going to announce, reveal, and launch the third game in the series on the night of the TGAs. This is a misdirect.
Oh, shit. I thought you were going to go, we need to feed this post to AI and have AI read it to see how it comes off.
No, I wouldn't do that. That's you get shot for saying that.
I will.
This year, I think we're safe. I think Expedition 33. Well, okay, I'm going to stop.
Hello, Smithers. Yeah.
I will say, like, yeah, what? If the character in Silksong was like a secondary character in Hollow Knight, then I choose to believe that Hollow Knight 3 is going to be the little bell ringing bug as your main character.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's a rhythm game. Let's go.
Yeah. Hollow Knight Theatrhythm confirmed. Let's go. Yeah.
Oh, one can dream.
We've been going for a while. How does everybody feel about buttoning it up?
Let's button.
The credit.
Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. We appreciate you taking the time. I'm going to make the admin super brief. Vote in the title of the year the poll that has been posted. And tune into Duckstream December the 12th through the 14th. You can see some details at duckfeed.tv/duckstream. For that 48 hours where we're going to be streaming to raise money for Point of Pride, an organization that provides life-saving and life-changing care directly to trans people. It's going to be fun. I was telling them in the green room what I've worked out that I'm going to do for my solo stuff. And I'm real excited. At least one of the things is very stupid. is there anything I'm forgetting?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah. So I've been K Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at K.Zone.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I've been Moxie.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. I didn't write.
I got you covered.
Okay. What do you got?
Lead horse for me is The Kid's Hunger for Lore.
Okay.
That is pretty good.
Okay.
I had also Pay No Attention to the Raccoon Behind the Curtain.
I'm going to shorten that to The Raccoon Behind the Curtain.
Works for me. All of Our Bones Are Dust. Okay. We should do All Our Bones Are Dust. And then finally, I think maybe literally the last thing said on the show, Hollow Knight Theatrhythm.
Oh, man. Theatrhythm is a typing challenge.
But yeah, it is.
Ben, what do you have?
I just have one. I have, what the fuck is a Fazbear?
Okay. And Moxie.
I've got nothing, although I do kind of like what the fuck is a Fazbear.
I don't want to put fuck in the title. How about The Kid's Hunger for Lore?
That is pretty good.
I'm a fan of that.
Okay. It is decided.